Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC presents Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Shop, click, drive at robertsrobinson.com.
Most questions were asked, and all questions that were asked were answered by Kansas head basketball coach Bill Self at a news conference in Lawrence on Wednesday just before noon. This was a news conference that was called a couple of days ago after a lot of stuff was swirling about sort of a disappearance of Bill Self since he had the heart issue and the procedure performed at the University of Kansas Health System Hospital in Kansas City the week before the Big 12 tournament started, or the week of the Big 12 tournament before the event started for Kansas and they played a game. Bill Self, it was reported, had two stents placed in arteries around his heart. And we've not really heard from the coach since. They kept saying everything was going to be fine. He's going to be coaching soon. And then he didn't. And then Kansas was knocked out. And Bill Self purchased a $7.5 million condo in Florida, had been staying in Florida, hadn't been seen by many people. And as the portal opened up and recruiting got underway, it was time for Bill Self to speak publicly. At one point in his news conference today, he was asked if he was doing this to get the word out to recruits that everything was okay. And he turned to the media and he said, "Well, that's your job. I'm hoping you'll get it out to everyone." So there's a lot of factors in why he was there talking about this today. And the University of Kansas had kind of asked him, "Hey, maybe you should do this prior to the KU basketball banquet, which is Thursday night, so the banquet doesn't become about a million questions asking about your health." He said, "Great, I'll do it." And Bill Self, in his typical fashion, was very open, honest, and said right at the very beginning, "It's good to see you guys again, and you can ask anything you want." He puts people at ease that way, and the news conference went off really without a hitch. If you didn't get a chance to listen to it, this was a really informative news conference where he talked about what happened to him, and he said his blood pressure was, quote, a major concern and will be going forward, that he had blood pressure issues and balance issues, and for a couple of days leading up to going into the hospital, he had tightness in his chest and some pain. He went on to say that he had met with reporters the afternoon that it happened. He said, "You guys didn't know, but I wasn't myself that day. It wasn't like I was completely out of it, but I had some chest pain. I didn't feel right. A couple hours later, I said, 'This isn't right. Let's go to the hospital.' We went to the hospital. They found out what they found out, and then they immediately did the procedure." So Bill Self was not himself, clearly. He said, after he was feeling better a week later in Des Moines, he would sit over by the side in a chair and have a mic and a speaker and holler out some instructions at some of his players at practice, but he couldn't coach. The doctors told him if he coached the first game of the NCAA tournament, that he said, first he said the Big 12 was completely out. There was no chance he was coaching in the Big 12. Then they said, if you coach the first game of the NCAA tournament, you're likely to miss the second game, but there's a chance if you don't coach the first one, maybe the second. He said, that turned out to not be true. There was no way I was coaching that weekend. I was hoping to coach the following week, but I don't think they ever really knew if that was going to be the case. Bill Self said, quote, "I just knew I wasn't right." And so he had this major concern about blood pressure, and that's what the doctors were doing. As he watched KU play in the tournament, they hooked him up to a blood pressure machine so they could watch and see what happened to his blood pressure and all of his vitals when a game became... So it was the hardest thing he ever did. It was hard to watch the game. He had no say, no control, no anything. It was very difficult, but the doctors let him watch and they monitored him while he was watching the games. And their concern obviously was blood pressure. A big part of the discussion was his health leading up to this and his lifestyle. He basically said what a lot of people said. "I've had doctors tell me for years," he said, "I've to make lifestyle choices," quote, "I was inconsistent my whole adult life," unquote, in taking that seriously about diet and exercise. "But I'm taking it seriously now," he said. "This is going to be a change in who and what I am. Stress is a major factor," the doctors have talked about. He said, "I cannot avoid stress in my job." But the strongest part of his news conference was when he said, they said, what Todd Lebo of Sports Radio 810 asked, "Did you think about the end of your career over the last month?" And he, before the question was out, he said, "Yes, of course I thought about the end of my coaching career. I reflected on a lot of things while I was away and what I was doing." He said, "I would get up, I'd read some news, I'd get something healthy to eat, I'd go for a walk, and I'd come back and go, okay, now what? Am I watching TV?" He said, "I did that for a few days, and I realized, quote, I miss my job, I want to do my job," end quote. And it's the most important thing there is to his personal happiness. Now, if there was a family crisis or a family issue, I think Bill Self would go address that and not coach and whatever, but he doesn't have a situation like that. He's born to coach basketball. There's no question about it. He's a Hall of Famer. He's a legend. He's a great coach. And who wouldn't want to do that job? He says going forward, he's going to do everything he can to not endure as much stress while coaching. He will change his ways. He'll change his diet, his exercise. He may change some coaching ways. But part of the stress will be going away. I thought this was the most interesting line of the entire news conference. He said, I was a guy who, quote, thought stress affects everyone else, but it doesn't affect me, end quote. That's what he said. I get that. I think I'm the same way. I think a lot of people are built that way. Then he said, a lot of the stress that we've been dealing with the last couple of years is about to be relieved soon. He didn't specifically say NCAA, and there was no follow-up question that I heard. Certainly not right after it. Maybe it happened later or something while I was taking notes, but there was no follow-up question. What he was saying was the NCAA matter is going to be done in a few weeks. It will be over, and that stress that he's been living with will be gone. So I don't know, you know, we see a lot of people under stress that gain weight, they eat, they drink, they consume, they do whatever, and they feel stress. The most stressful point in my life was a personal issue in a very short period of time when my dad died and a couple of years subsequent to that, and I actually lost weight. So I completely got different. I wigged out and didn't want to eat. It was a very strange phenomenon for me because I love to eat and I've never been my target weight. I've always been over my target weight, but healthy. And so everybody does this differently, but I don't think there's any question. We've watched Bill Self gain some weight. I think we're going to see him by the time the season starts back up next year, down a whole bunch of pounds. He sounds very serious about doing this because the doctors have said, if you want to coach, if that's really what you want to do, you got to lose weight, you got to exercise, you got to eat better, and you got to get stress out of your life. Not the stress of a last 2 minutes of a game where you're really worried about winning a game. That's a whole different deal. That stress is different. Those moments come and go. What they're talking about is just living with stress, having stress in your life on a day-to-day basis, moment-to-moment with different things. And Bill Self indicated he's been living under a lot of stress. The blood pressure was a very big concern and stress were a concern, and he knows that going forward, and he's going to have that handled. So a lot of questions answered. He said 100% I'll be back coaching next year unless they make some sort of decision here that I'm not here. 100% I'll be back here next year coaching, and I'm making these changes. And what I realized over the last several weeks doing nothing was, and I quote, I miss my job. I want to do my job, unquote. And I think that's exactly right. I think that is the case with most successful people. If you're good at something, successful people that I've known that are good at something don't ever want to stop doing it. They love doing it because they know they're good at it. It many times comes easy or naturally to them. It's lucrative. It gives them a purpose. There's a lot of great things about working. There's even better things about working and being successful. Really good stuff from Bill Self, this news conference. Today, he has answered every question that was asked. The only question, well, there's a couple questions. You know, nobody's point blank said, was this a heart attack? Because KU put out the statement earlier, oh, I didn't have a heart attack, whatever. That's a little in semantics, but I didn't hear anybody say, was this a total surprise? Have you had health issues prior to this? Have you had heart conditions or issues with your heart prior to this? And I didn't hear anybody ask that. And it was never really addressed. So I can't believe it was a complete shocker. I can't believe that. He even indicated, look, I've been told by doctors for a long time that I need to make some lifestyle choices. I'm a big man to begin with. He's a basketball player. He's tall. He's athletic. So he's never going to be a skinny fella, but you got to take care of it. And he had clearly gained a bunch of weight, and I think most of it will be gone by the start of next year. I think Bill Self is going to need a whole bunch of new clothes. I would say suits, but his old suits may fit him. You know, they don't wear suits anymore. Just tossing one in here. I really thought the San Diego State coach on Monday night in the national championship game should have had at least pants and a jacket on. You made it to the national title game. I think there will be a day when you're an old man and you look back at the photos from that game and you're going to think you looked silly. You should have had something a little nicer on than your sweats, essentially, is what he was wearing. That's just me. I get the coaches like to wear these comfort pants and pullovers and coach, and for the most part, I'm good with that. I think you get to the tournament, you get on national TV, especially if you get to the Final Four, you ditch that. You look sharp. And you let everybody know that this is a moment. And it might send a nice message to your team, too. This is a special night. Here we go. It's on. I'm looking and feeling my best. You look and play and feel your best. But Bill Self, 100% back at Kansas. So good news for Kansas basketball fans. All right, KKHI is brought to you by the Finch Knife Company, online at finchknifeco.com. They are also available in Shields and the Bullet Hole in Mission. We love the Finch Knife guys. Big time college basketball fans. Spencer and Steve and the gang over there. They like to keep life from getting dull with a Finch pocket knife, online at finchknifeco.com. Advantage Termite and Pest Control, advantagetpc.com. No strangers to KU basketball, that's for sure. No doubt there, advantagetpc.com. Advantage Termite and Pest Control, 913-768-8989. And Dr. Jeremy Fry and his team at Fry Orthodontics with 13 locations in the area. When it's time to get that perfect smile, we hope that you will go to Fry Orthodontics. First appointment is always free. It's a consultation. You can make the decision after that, whether it's braces or Invisalign for teenagers or adults. They'll treat you with white glove treatment. Very gentle, very compassionate, and fun. At Fry Orthodontics, your smile is just the start. Fantastic conversation coming up here with Jim Colbert, who is a longtime friend. Knows more. He's forgotten more about golf than I will ever know. We're going to Masters preview. It's toward the back part of the interview. We're also going to talk about the LIV Golf Tour breaking off from the PGA Tour and how this almost happened in the 80s and how Jim Colbert on the PGA Tour's board of directors was instrumental in stopping it from happening. It's an unbelievable story that he actually got Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, and Tom Watson to not leave the PGA Tour and start their own thing. A remarkable story that he'll recount for you. And we'll talk about a little bit about his pride and joy, Colbert Hills, where everybody should go play this year. No question about it. You should go play Colbert Hills. My buddy, Jim Colbert, with this gets different now, okay? This is two friends talking. Colbert gets a little salty with his language, and we get a little sideways with each other a little bit. Not sideways. We have differing opinions on a couple of things. I think you'll be able to tell that we're friends, but that's what makes this conversation saucy, and I like saucy conversations, and I think you're going to enjoy it too. Hit it!
The KK Has Issues conversation is presented by Joslyn's Jewelry, 95th and Antioch, or online at joslynsjewelry.com.
Well, he's a dear friend, and it is always so much fun to talk golf with Jim Colbert, and we got a lot to talk about on this episode of Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. It is Masters week. We're going to get to a Masters preview, but it's also, for me, and always has been, not for Jim, it always has been the unofficial start of golf season, because the weather's turning, the grass is getting green, and here in the Midwest, we start playing. Of course, Jim made a living all those years playing golf pretty much all winter long in nice warm places collecting big fat checks, and he joins us now. Colbert, how are you, buddy? Everything good?
Yeah, everything's good. We're out in Palm Desert at Bighorn, but this is the worst winter we've had out here. I mean, this has always been the best winter weather in the United States. You know, I lived in Florida for 7 years. So what I was, you know, doing this year, I mean, November the 20th, we've had, up until the rest of this week, supposed to be, we've had 4 days of the temperature being 80 or higher. Mm. That's unheard of.
That is unheard of. Yeah. That is.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I'm sure everybody's really feeling bad for you, pro. It's, you know, those 68 degree days are terrible too, right? So that's a good
thing.
Well,
I'm trying to get, my charge from the state of California reduced. I'm not getting what I was paying for.
Good luck. Said they're broke. There's no refunds in California.
No. I mean, they're only a couple hundred million behind this year.
No big deal. Yeah. So it is before we get into the Masters and golf and some of the issues with the tours and stuff, and I can't wait to get your insight on this, because you and I really haven't talked about this. We haven't talked in a little bit of a while.
No.
Tell me about the start of the season. You'll be home here. Well, home. You'll be back to Kansas in a few weeks at Colbert Hills.
That is home.
I know it is home. It's just such a fantastic golf course. And I know that our listeners are very familiar with it because I talk about it a lot, but you've got these new lodges with the stay and play packages, which is really, really cool as well. I think what's amazing, Jim, is you built your vision, and you obviously had a lot of help and a lot of people behind you. You built your vision for something spectacular with Manhattan. And while it has been 20 years, Manhattan is now the second fastest growing city in America. It feels like the city is caught up with Colbert Hills with everything that you started there. And now you have the ability to make Colbert Hills even greater. Your clubhouse is fantastic. You have lodges where people can stay. Did you ever think, I mean, I know you dreamed and hoped, but did you really think this was all going to happen?
Well, the property was so good that you'd have to be really bad to build a bad golf course there, because we had 1,000 acres to go. I used Jack Brower that I'd done a lot of stuff with. And, I mean, we designed 4 holes, 2 on each 9. The rest of them, if you were a golfer, you could stand there and say, oh, that's a hole. That's a hole. And I knew we weren't going to have any international or national tournaments because we didn't have the infrastructure. So we can have state amateurs and stuff like that, but we couldn't handle huge galleries. So I just went down the valley and saved the property for, I mean, it's just a great piece of property on the houses on. I mean, you're up above looking down in huge setups. You don't get a bunch of golf balls in your house or yard or pool. And it was slower than I ever thought. It took almost 10 years longer than what I thought it would take. Mm. I offered to bet a couple guys that in 10 years, this place would be sold out. It almost took 10 years for the real estate to hit. But I mean, they got $1 million homes. They got $5 million homes. They've got $300,000 homes. It's such a wide property. There's room for everything. And so much of our alumni, the wealthy alumni who supported sports in Kansas State, used to come back for the events and everything, but they never lived there. And now they built houses and, you know, they actually come to town and spend money and have built some beautiful homes. And, the Vanier family are really proud of that now.
Well, it's a destination golf course. And I know from day one, what you wanted for the course was for the public to come, anybody, the golf team, certainly at Kansas State, the teams.
Yeah.
But the public that comes to feel like they're playing a PGA Tour quality course every time they play there. And anytime I've ever played with you, I mean, I've told you this 1,000 times. I don't know that this would happen for anyone else. Okay. I'm just saying it happens for me. There's two places in this world where I make a lot of putts. I make them at Colbert Hills and I make them at Loch Lloyd. And I'm pretty sure those are the best greens I've ever played. There's just some sort of consistency to them. I don't know exactly what it is. Is it also a design thing or what? Because when I play at Colbert Hills, I feel like I am playing a tour quality course. I mean, it's just fantastic.
Loch Lloyd, where's that located?
That's the one way out in Belton. You won there a couple times.
I'm being facetious. Of course I did.
So how much did you win? How much did you win there?
I won twice, finished second another time. And they must have got tired of it because then they moved it over by the airport.
Yeah, they did. were you almost birdied the back nine one year?
That was amazing. I did birdie 10 through 17 and bogey and part 18 lifted out and Tiffany Greens and Springs. Yeah. Tiffany Springs.
Yeah.
And I mean, you could have fried an egg on my head or under my hat when I didn't birdie the last hole. Cause you know, just to give you a little of the, what's the difference with these players? How do some do it and some don't? I made a long putt on 12, and it's about 60 yards to 13, and I'd already birdied 10 and 11. And I was just walking over there. And, you know, in a minute, I went over the rest of the holes coming in. I can birdie that, I can birdie that, I can birdie that, I can birdie that. And when I got to 18, it didn't pop in that I could birdie it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to think about it. I said, I'll worry about that when I get there.
Yeah.
And so I birdied them all right to there.
Yeah.
That's the only one that didn't pop into my head.
Yeah.
And
that used to be,
I hit really good shots there.
I haven't played there in a long time, but that 18th hole was always tricky for me.
Oh, it's a real late dog leg right then uphill to a narrow green over a bunker.
You know my game. You know how tough that is for me.
Yeah, and, you know, you wouldn't remember, but after I came out of the scores tent, I don't think I had met you or knew you very well. I think you set up a show there, and I think I went in and talked to you.
Yeah, for sure. That's 100% the case.
But I was really upset, and I'm in the scores tent, and, you know, I'm going through this, you know. So I add up my score. I said 61, 11 under par. I'm thinking, well, that's not terrible.
Everybody feels bad for you. You shot 8 under on the back nine. What a terrible deal. Yeah. But so do you get excited every year to get back to Kansas and get to Colbert Hills and welcome all the folks to come play golf and maybe take a minute or two and talk about the inspiration of these lodges? You've been to great golf courses and clubs all over the world, and many of the really great ones have lodges right there where you can stay and play. And that's sort of what the higher end clubs courses are known for. And now you have that at Colbert Hills too.
Yeah. And, Tom Devlin, you know, down in Wichita, at the Flint Hills, he's got beautiful, beautiful lodges and quite a few of them. And he has a national membership that he sold a lot of things through the USGA, got really connected there, and he's marketed it nationally and done a great job. But Hutchinson, Prairie Dunes, you know, they've got, I think I've got the number right, 7 lodges, and they have a national membership because back in the day, when I was playing as an amateur thing, it was the number, it was the worst it was ever be was the 3rd best golf course in the United States, you know, and it was won a bunch of times. So they developed a national membership, and both them, Tom Devlin and, Prairie Dunes, you know, they opened their books to us and they gave us all the numbers and everything they did. And what we decided, we wanted to be better than Hutchinson and as close to the Flint Hills, but there's a lot of stuff overdone at the Flint Hills with the, you know, flooring and that anyway.
Yeah.
We've got the nicest rooms in Manhattan by a lot at basically competitive rates. We're about the same. We might be a little more in the summer, but we got real competitive rates. We're just now really getting into marketing it. We're trying to use your podcast also to get into marketing it. But with the COVID and all that stuff, I mean, we're a year and a half behind.
Yeah.
So we didn't get to do a lot of advanced stuff because who knew what was going to happen and when the wood's going to come, when you're going to get to build it. But
I'm wondering if you can envision.
Everybody really loves it.
I'm wondering if you can envision a scenario where Mrs. Colbert kicks us out one night and sends us over to the lodges.
Well, I can tell you when that happens, I'm going with you, pal.
No, that's what I meant. That's what I meant. We're both out of here. Like, you guys are out of here. There's an empty lodge tonight. Get your butt over there.
Yeah. And Audra, Dwayne's wife, wouldn't let us in their place.
No. So, no.
He's to the lodges.
He would be the first one kicked out of his place. So it would be me and you and him in the lodges, all kicked out. That's exactly what
it would
be.
Exactly.
But we'd have a hell of a good time. And, you know, I'll say this about Colbert Hills, and I'm not messing around with anybody that likes to play golf or whatever. If you want to have a good time, go, because a good time is there to be had. The golf course is tremendously fun. The lodges are gorgeous. The food's great at the restaurant. They'll cater to your every whim, whatever you want to do. And it's a great corporate outing too. If somebody has like some sales reps they want to take on a trip or some clients to bring them in, maybe if you work regionally and have people in Omaha or Wichita or things like that, say, hey, meet me at Colbert Hills. We'll all stay there. I want to take care of you guys for a few days and play golf. You can handle all those things. It's a pretty cool deal, man. Really, really.
Yeah. Our general manager, Jeremy, you know, he's been around golf his whole life. He's a pretty good player. He's been around golf courses since he was a little kid. And so played a lot of golf besides hunting and fishing. but he's a master chef in his own right. He's got a degree, says that. Mm-hmm. And he's done liquor sales, wine sales, covered large territories. I mean, he's got, well, I know his expertise in Manhattan. There's nobody even close to it.
Right.
So
that's awesome.
That was the biggest difference in the last 5-6 years. It's been our restaurant and bar and food and beverage service.
That's cool.
It's really good. He's had a couple of really good chefs, and if something happens, you know, he can do it himself. And so we expect a lot of him, and he's done a really good job there.
Yeah. All right, before we get into these tours, I'm going to warn you right now, I just had a charge come through over at Canyon Farms. My handicap is paid up for the year, and they had a little deal. You could put a little extra in there to raise it a couple of points if you wanted. So I'm just warning you right now, my handicap's going up. I'm going to be ready for you this year. You just find yourself a partner, figure it out, but I'm coming to get you. It's been a little lopsided through the years, but I think it's about time that me and the friend I'm not supposed to mention on a podcast, we're going to get in your wallet this year. I just want to let you know.
Well, you know, good luck, but did you just tell me that you could pay some extra dollars and get extra strokes on your handicap?
Yeah, we're not supposed to talk out loud about it.
My ears sometimes don't work very good, but that sounds like what you just told me.
Right. Imagine what Dwayne would have for a handicap if he could pay it up. He'd have the black card resource. Out. Yeah, he'd have his black card out so fast. He is a crook.
Yeah. Definitely.
Looking forward to it. Okay, let's talk about these tours. I sent you a podcast recently, and some of our in common friends, a listener sent this to me, and I went and listened to it, and he told me listen in these places, but it was a very interesting podcast in the 80s when Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer and to a certain extent Tom Watson and some others were considering, I guess, or at least talking about the possibility of branching off of the PGA Tour and starting their own thing to make more money for themselves. You were the head of the players board with the PGA Tour and were working to keep everything together. And it was one of the most fascinating things I've heard. I've heard you tell the stories before about the things that you did, but it culminated with a flight on Jack Nicklaus's airplane where you informed him of stuff that he didn't know. And it became a game changer. You want to try to give me the Cliff's Notes version and walk me through, because now we have the PGA Tour and LIV Golf. And it sounds like we were almost there in the 80s. But according to this podcast, Jim Colbert saved the PGA Tour.
Well, you know, that's a little strong, but I was right in the middle of it because I've always been a big fan of Dean Beeman. I served on the board with him, and then we got him elected commissioner. And just a quick synopsis, he called me when he finally got to New York in our offices there. He says, Colbert, here's where we are today, PGA Tour. We got $94,000 in the bank, and we own a typewriter and rented office space in New York. Mm-hmm. And when he left 15, 16 years later, we had, you know, I don't know, 125, 130 million in assets and 110 or 15 million in cash flow a year for the players. And I mean, he did a hell of a job. So he was on the line because the superstars were upset with marketing because they owned marketing. And we did a lot of corporate sponsors that, you know, paid for the TV rights, that they bought pro-am spots, they built tents at the thing. But that first couple of years when they were doing this kind of stuff, they were showing other competitors hats. And so we started marketing the players. And most of them didn't have agents like Watson did, Nicklaus and Palmer. And they felt like we were getting into their pocket. And they thought that was their rights to market themselves. And it was, but we had the same rights.
Yeah, you know, right.
All the players did. And so, be honest with you, Tom Watson's manager, it was his wife's brother.
Chuck Rubin.
Chuck Rubin really ran the show. I mean, he was the show. And Arnold, you know, Mark McCormick was his agent. Mark had just remarried and was on a 6-month sabbatical traveling around the world with his new wife. And Jack had, his agent had been, I'm pretty sure the timing's right on this, but he had several agents after he left McCormick. And I know one of them, and I think it was the one at this time, was he used to be the president of Florida State. But he went to work for Nicklaus running this operation. Yeah. I don't think he knew much about it.
So did they want to start their own tour, or did they want to have their own tournaments and still stay on the PGA Tour?
Well, they were looking for the top players and maybe reduce it. But on this particular thing, it was all about marketing. It wasn't starting another tour. That was the next thing Norman did the next time Norman tried to take over something. So, but Watson ran, his agent ran this deal. So at Muirfield, Nicklaus's tournament, they had a rain out. And so he got the top players together and told them what they were going to do. And so Arnold and Jack signed the letter. The other 19 players just signed the letter per se, but Arnold and Jack were the signatures, mm-hmm. you know, on the deal.
Right.
And so anyway,
and you were not one of the 19, just to clarify for everybody here, you were not one of the 19, you were working with the PGA Tour board of directors and the commissioner, and you knew what about the commissioner and told Jack Nicklaus what?
Well, you know, first of all, I was in Texas at a board meeting after the, Dallas tournament, the Byron Nelson. And I walked in the locker room and Jack had about 25 or 30 guys lined up and he was talking about all this. So I was behind him. So I was just standing there listening. So Jack was always in and out. He never hung in the locker room. And, he was telling all these guys. And so, I listened, and then when he finished the turnaround, I said, "Oh, hi, Jim. I didn't know you were there." And so we had a board meeting. That was like on a Saturday, and then we had a board meeting on Monday. So we went to the board meeting, and when we finished the board meeting, I said, "You know, when we finished the meeting, could I, you know, have something to say?" And they all said yes. And we have those three independent business directors, and four players and three PGA guys, president, vice president, secretary, treasurer. So I said, I got a question for the independent directors and the PGA guys. I want an honest opinion how you think we're doing with this PGA tour. And they all said, "Jesus, we're knocking them dead. Are you kidding?" I mean, they were like, whatever. I mean, why are you asking a question? And I just said, because there's big something coming. I don't know when, right. But it's coming. They're coming after us. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask the question before they had a clue. But, you know, in the first question, when after that, they just looked at Beeman and said, do you do an annual report? And he said, no. It was like, are you kidding me?
Right.
You're running this business. You're not telling them what you're doing.
Right.
They were pissed.
Yeah.
So Dean started right away. Yeah. You know, and so he had like a month to get into it. And then they were at Muirfield and I didn't play because my back was bad. And I got a call from Nicklaus telling me what they were doing, and they were sending this letter, and you know, they really gave us like 2 weeks or something, and then we'll come in and show you how to run your business. And so Beeman called me. It couldn't have been 10 minutes after that. And so I got on a plane and flew to Florida and, you know, just started looking through all the stuff and reading everything. And then Jack came in on Monday.
In Florida.
In Florida. And the next tournament was Washington. So he came in the office on Monday and they just left me and Jack alone. And so we had a long talk. And, you know, he's, geez, I didn't know that.
Right.
You know, he said, I'm going to Washington. He says, can you go up there with me? He said, I'm not playing in the tournament, but I'm building a golf course up there and I have business. I said, can you fly up there? And I said, fine. So I flew up with him and that afternoon and got a room at the Marriott. And he wanted to bring his manager over. And so we met at the Marriott that night. And, you know, he said, I want you to tell him, what's the name there? His manager. You know, so I go through the whole thing. And
that was the end of it, basically. It was set in motion at point, Nicholas, to end it. Was the flight uncomfortable?
Yeah.
I mean, you guys were sort of on opposing sides here, but Nicholas didn't have the information that you had. Was the flight uncomfortable?
No, he knew he was in trouble because of the meeting we had in Jacksonville earlier that day.
Yeah.
And so he was 0-for-5 on their points. And so...
So were they uninformed, Jim, or was it ego? Was Nicholas and you know, Palmer, were they putting this thing together thinking, hey, we're bigger and better than this? Or did they just not know enough about what was going on? What do you think the underlying issue was with what they tried to do? Because they failed, and they knew they failed, and then it all worked out fine. Everybody was happy, right? I mean, it didn't take long to resolve this, and everybody was then once again happy, and the stars of the game were making big money off marketing and things like that. Weren't they pretty happy pretty quickly?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, if you really looked at it, Chuck Rubin ran it. Okay.
All right.
McCormick was out of town. Arnold's playing the seniors.
Do you think Chuck Rubin misled them?
Well, I don't know if he intentionally. He was sitting right there. And
he could have just been wrong.
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely.
All right.
Definitely.
Unintentionally wrong.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So they is, you know, that's it. It's over. We'll get out of this. And I said, no way. I said, what are you talking about? I said, Chuck Rubin's got Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer's signature and 19 of the best players in the world on this letter. I said, Chuck has to leak it to the press. And then we're both screwed. Mm-hmm. You know, you're back in the corner, we're back in the corner, and I'm not exaggerating. Jack said, can I use your phone? This was long before cell phone. He called Chuck Rubin from my room, and he threatened him in within an inch of his life if this got out, you know?
Wow.
And
he told
Chuck he would never get another job in the golf business for the rest of his life, and he would make sure that happened. Wow. So I don't think Tom was running it.
Right.
I really don't. They're all playing golf, man. You know, they're out doing their thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, we were marketing, but it only enhanced everybody.
Wow. Exactly. So cooler heads prevailed. After you met with Nicholas, Nicholas decided we're not going to be at a place where the PGA Tour and LIV Golf are right now. Because as far as I'm concerned, those two are kind of dug in against each other. Where is this thing today, Jim, between the PGA Tour and LIV Golf? The LIV golfers are in Augusta. Okay, Cameron Smith is one of the favorites this week. There's some other guys that have won the Masters that are on the LIV Tour. Where do you think these tours are right now? And do you have a crystal ball where this thing all goes?
Well, I would say as long as Norman's involved, there won't be any settlement at all. Okay. This is four for him. He'll be 0 for 4 when he finishes on this.
You think LIV Golf will fail?
Well, here's the part that I just recently found out a lot more about. I'm not using any names. There's two lawsuits from LIV towards the PGA Tour. And, you know, it's like conflicting events. You know, what if you play in the NFL? You're not going to play in another football league, right?
Right.
You know, if you play in the major leagues, you're not playing on another baseball team. But he's suing the tour for implementing those rules. You know who signed those rules? Nicklaus and Palmer.
Oh, my God.
The players.
Yeah.
Okay, just protecting the tour, you know, and, you know, it's hard to believe, but LIV could lose $6 billion
but they
in
won't,
the lawsuit.
But they won't feel it. I mean, the money.
Billion?
I know. I look back at things that have been successful that are startups in sports. I've done a lot of, you know, work on this. And of course, the one nearest and dearest to people's hearts in Kansas City is Lamar Hunt starting the AFL, and the whole thing was a joke.
Yeah.
Has worked. It has worked on a lot of occasions if you can wait it out. And so Lamar Hunt had a famous line. This was about 1960 or so. He was a very young man, and he'd lost $1 million that year. And he had and the reporters came to him and said, "You lost $1 million. What's going to happen to your league here?" He said, "Well, at $1 million a year, I'll let you know in 30 years.
Exactly.
And he had deep pockets, and his daddy was funding it, and he was like, "I'm not afraid. We're going to keep going." And then eventually, over time, things happened. And I think the challenge for me, when I look at the PGA Tour, and you just tell me if I'm all wet on this, it's not the names. Like, Phil Mickelson's no threat to go win a bunch on the PGA Tour or anything. The PGA Tour does lack a little star power. Some of them have gone over. They're older golfers that have gone over to do this other thing that are not eligible to play on the PGA Tour champions. But to me, it's what if LIV starts identifying the best 17, 18, 19, 20-year-olds, and they start grabbing
doing that.
They are already doing it, but it's going to be hard because it's no sure thing. But if they go grab them all, eventually the talent pool is out.
Damn it. They didn't get the NFL because of grabbing the young talent. They started, I got this from John Brody. Brody's contract was up. He was free agent before they had all these new rules. They gave him $400,000 cash and a $400,000 a year contract. And the owners, John said, they sent me and my wife and our kids to Hawaii and told us not to use the phone. And then it turns out the owners started looking, the NFL owners started looking, and they'd already signed the next 5 or 6 really good quarterbacks that were going to run out of contracts, and they were going to the league.
Right.
Yeah, well, but LIV doesn't have that. They're not getting the Rorys and the guys who could play. The only one they got with any value in the future is Cam Smith. But his name's going to go away because he gets to play in the majors. He's not going to get ranked. And the guys he's got, the Koepkas and Johnson and all those guys, they went for the cash.
Sure they did.
They haven't won in 4 years.
All right. So let me, I'm not disagreeing with you because I don't know how this ends. I just know that what I've seen in the past is when something is really well-funded and people are dug in, they find a way to wait it out. And to me, LIV's avenue to being something much better than it is right now is with young players, getting the young stars before they're stars even. I mean, you can get them as a sophomore at Oklahoma State and sign a kid for 5 years.
How are they going to be a star playing in 45-man fields, 54 holes?
I hear you. Because then they can't.
Shotgun start.
Yeah.
They're not, you know, and the American corporations, I mean, they're not going to spend too much money representing the Saudis, in golf.
Well, yeah, you know, this whole Saudi thing to me is ridiculous too. Look, I'm no big fan of the Saudis and their culture and things that they do and some of the laws that they have and whatnot. But this is absurd anymore. I guarantee I've had Saudi gasoline in my car, Everybody in America does business with the Saudis. So I'm sick of hearing that argument. That's ridiculous. But you know,
but they're not going to front your business here.
Agreed. I agree with you there. So let me ask you this question, because I firmly hear you. You're a PGA Tour guy, and you should be. You won 35 tournaments, whatever. You won 7 on the regular tour, I think, if I've got the number right. Let's say eight on the regular tour. You won 8 on the regular tour. Let's say, and you probably won all those by what, age 36, 38?
No, my best year was when I was 42.
42. Okay, so you're 42.
You can call me a slow learner. Call me dumb.
So I don't have the ages of your kids in front of me when you're 42, but let's say you're in your mid-30s, you got kids at home, whatever, and, you know, you made nice money playing on the PGA Tour, but it was nothing like today. You were not set for life at age 35 by playing professional golf and winning tournaments. You weren't set yet. You had a lot of years to live. You had kids
really?
To raise.
Hey. My career earnings on the regular tour were a whopping $1.6 million.
For winning 8 tournaments and however many top tens it was, dozens of top tens.
Oh, yeah, sure. All kinds
right.
of stuff. Yeah.
So you're telling me when you were 38 years old, if LIV Golf called and offered you $10 million to jump, you'd stay?
Well, I would make a business decision.
Right.
I just know one thing. I would have been smart enough to know, like a lot of the tour guys, you know, when there's two games, you're going to make more money. Okay.
Right.
I mean, look what's happened to the PGA Tour money.
But you could have been exactly the player they're targeting. If you were in your 30s or whatever, and you'd won a bunch of tournaments and.
Well, that wasn't going to bring down Arnold and Jack.
No,
and
I'm not talking about bringing them down. I'm talking about what your decision would have been, because you've been on the board and incredibly loyal to the PGA Tour. It is in your DNA. It's in your blood. I know how much you love that tour. What would have happened if another tour was starting up and somebody offered you $5 million when you were 35 years old?
You know, when I was 35, I was still a dreamer. I wanted it all, wanted to be the best in the world.
Okay.
I would have had very little interest.
Mm.
If there's one thing that I was, it was persistent.
Okay.
And I knew this was a long journey, but I'm in.
Okay. Because to me, I'm an outsider. When I look at Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy, and they're the most staunch PGA Tour guys there are, that's an easy decision. I mean, Tiger and Rory have so much money now that there's no reason to leave for money. I don't know what Phil Mickelson's financial situation was or whatever. He's had some bad dealings.
I do.
Well,
he's
lost a lot of money through the years, hasn't he?
Yes.
Okay, so they reportedly offered him $200
million. He's tried to come back now. He's tried to get out, but... That's not an easy thing to do.
It's not, because you got to pay it back, don't you?
Well, they don't get it all,
right,
Kevin? It's on a more of an annual basis,
right?
And some of it counts against your winnings, depending on what individual deals were.
Yeah.
So it's not all that shows on the surface. And if they fold, and they still owe you $100 million or something, good luck going to get it in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, well, there's a hedge fund in New York that's involved in the thing, too. It is. It's all part of a fund. So, but yeah, who knows? I'm with you. I get it.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing if you're rooting for something here, the last thing you want is somebody from the LIV Tour showing up at the Masters and winning the darn thing, right?
No, nobody. Hey, yeah, you wouldn't want that to happen. But the four majors they got the easiest program in the world. If you're already exempt, you're in. But even Cam, now he only has 4 years left to be exempt in the majors. And he's not going to get any ranking except in those four tournaments, when everybody else is going to be rated in 20 to 35. So they're not going to show up in the national rankings. And trying to get sue people for the rankings, playing 54 holes, shotgun start. With a field of 45 against a field of, you know, it varies on the tour from, you know, 100 to 144, playing against the best players in the world with a cut. I mean, there's no comparison. You can't rank them.
Right.
There's no comparison.
Yeah. My mind's a lot like yours. Okay. We both look at things and try to, we're both very inquisitive. We ask a lot of questions and try to figure out where things are going. Would you agree that we both have that in common?
Yes.
Okay.
But so, when I turned pro was the dumbest damn thing I ever did. Married with three kids. I didn't do it for money. I wanted to do it. I wanted to be an athlete. I wanted to be a golfer.
I know. I sit here and I look at the different tours. And there's an Asian tour, and there's the European tour, and there's the PGA tour, and there's the RNA, and there's the USGA, and I'll be darned if I could go walk on a street corner on the plaza and ask people to explain golf to me, and they couldn't explain it because they don't know the difference between the PGA Tour and the PGA of America, or the USGA for that matter, or all of these RNA and all these organizations. Most people don't know that the Masters is its own entity. They've got nothing to do with anybody. It's just a private club that has a tournament and brings the best players in. It's crazy.
Well, that's what the U.S. Open is. That's what the British Open is. And that's what the Masters is.
Why wouldn't the Saudis think with their money, we're going to get in on this too and build something? Because, my God, we're feeding seven different Masters here anyway.
Well, I mean, they don't have the players and they can't develop the name unless they get a similar game.
Well, the European Tour doesn't have the players.
They got a lot of players. And who owns 45% of the European Tour?
The PGA Tour?
Yeah.
Okay, well.
That's where their purses are growing now.
Yeah.
Through the PGA Tour. Okay? That is by far the second biggest tour.
Okay, so here's my only complaint about the PGA Tour because I'm rooting for them too. And, you know, I like to play devil's advocate here. There have been at least a handful of tournaments this year that are unwatchable. It's just nobody knows who the players are. It's not that good. I don't even remember the guy's name. Was it Kirk or one of them? Just totally gagged on the last hole and still somehow won in a playoff or something. We could call it exciting, except it was crappy golf. The guy peed his pants. It was awful. Not that that hasn't happened before in golf, because it has, but he's just playing against guys. You just don't even know who these guys are. And that's not every week. And they have these ranked tournaments now where all the good players have to play. And those have been great. We see Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, John Rahm. There's great players out there, and those are enjoyable. But, man, they might have too many events on that tour now. The ones at the bottom are just, if you're a golf fan and you're turning that on, you're like, if I was Liv, I'd put all my tournaments up against the bad PGA Tour events, and that's that.
Well, it doesn't matter because you're not matching them, okay?
Yep.
You don't have the same format. You don't even have a third of the players. So you got no chance. I watched the whole goddamn tour. Excuse me.
Say whatever you want. It's a podcast. You can say whatever you damn well please. But, Jim, when you watch on Sunday, like on the Masters Sunday, we'll watch the back nine of the Masters. Most of the last 2 hours of coverage, almost every day on golf, is like four players max. That's all they're showing. It's like four guys. They're not showing you the field.
Well, you're building a star system. Who do you watch?
Right.
Me, like right now, Kansas City Royals. You know, I root for them, Kansas City. I don't know one player. Okay?
Well, here's a little tip. You want to watch them anytime Brady Singer is pitching. The kid is good.
Okay.
There you go.
This might sound crazy, but that gal from Iowa, the Caitlin Clark, I've been watching her all year.
Yeah.
In the NBA, I watch Steph Curry. You know, if he's playing,
sure,
I love to watch him play.
Right.
I don't think I agree with him on politics or anything else, but I watch him play. And the Caitlin Clark, they drew almost 10 million viewers in the championship game.
That's because they got different rules than the guys. It's a whole different game. They let them fight. They let them trash talk. They let them throw the ball around. They have four quarters. Women's sports, there's no sportsmanship in that. They don't care, and the refs didn't care. The refs were awful. One of the coaches
It's the worst referee game I've ever seen in my life.
But
it didn't affect the outcome.
No.
They were terrible
for
both teams.
But you know what? It's also a reason why so many people watch, because people were on Twitter or they're texting their friends like, you watching this? These girls are throwing down, man. They're trash-talking each other and whatever. So word got out, turn this on. This is something different. That was way different than men's basketball. You'd agree with that.
Well, yeah, but I was watching it from the start.
Right.
I didn't have to hear Twitter or anything like
but
that.
But their audience grew because it was so chippy.
But it's, the Houston coach should, I mean, the
Iowa
coach for
Iowa or LSU?
No,
LSU.
LSU.
Yeah,
the LSU coach should have been on the thrown out in the
thrown
first
out.
Quarter
for grabbing the ref.
She's on the. She grabbed the ref, but she's standing in the field of play while they're playing.
I know. And as the ball's going to the other end, she reaches out and grabs a ref and stops the ref from going down the court. I'm like, ejection.
Right. And one of the timeouts, the LSU gal's looking at Cortland, and she does the ring thing.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. I mean, you know, even in the NBA, they sit you down.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
It was the worst refereed game I've ever seen.
It was, and I honestly believe that was part of the reason the audience grew so much. I think people were texting their friends going, oh, you got to see this. This is going crazy here. So
I'm telling you, I don't know, but I've been watching her all year, and their ratings have been unbelievable. Iowa.
Yeah.
I mean, she is.
Something.
Different. I mean, she's shooting from the logo.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
I mean.
No, it's crazy.
She's.
All right, let me get back to a couple more golf questions here, and I'll let you go before we, we might have to pour a glass of wine here if we keep going long enough.
I already had a little Chardonnay.
Oh, well, good enough. That's perfect. All right, so do you think the LIV golfers will get equal and fair treatment by CBS at the Masters this week? In other words, will those players be on television as much, especially Thursday and Friday when – they try to show anybody that hits a good shot. Do you think there's any bias to the coverage when these golfers are mixed together?
You know, I would hope not, but there might be. This is your product. This is what you do. And you don't do the other show. But anybody that's playing good, they will be in the show.
Yeah. For sure.
But are they going to do them any favors? I'd say absolutely not.
Yeah.
They're the ones that have, invested millions and millions, in the corporations.
Interesting.
So I don't think they're going to do them any favors. I'll admit I don't think like you do. I'm just going to be watching and if they're not showing something that I think I ought to see, then I'd have a problem.
Well, Phil is ground zero. How much will they show him if he hits a good shot? And if he misses a 3.5-foot putt, do they show that? I think Phil will be ground zero on this discussion, whether these players are treated fairly or not. I think Phil's the lightning rod.
Phil?
Yeah.
He doesn't have any friends out there, probably on either tour.
Well, and he doesn't have any at CBS Sports either. So, like I said, if he misses a 3-foot putt, they're probably going to show it.
Yeah. He's brought a lot of this on himself. I mean, not even this deal.
Why don't people like him? Because Jessica loves him. She loves watching him golf, but she doesn't know him. Why don't the other players like him? And that used to be Tiger, right?
No.
No,
they respected Tiger like everybody respected Nicklaus, but nobody disliked Nicklaus, but not very many people knew him. Players, when he came in the locker room, he went to his locker, changed shoes, smiled at everybody, said hello and left. So he didn't socialize. And that's what Tiger did. And I will say this. In the last 5 years, this is the happiest I've ever seen Tiger. He's
for
got
sure.
friends.
Yeah, for sure.
He's got friends.
Yeah.
But he was so disciplined and so lonely. I mean, he got in a little trouble here and there. Well,
come on now. There's nothing lower than what he just did to his girlfriend, Jim. It don't get any lower than that. You heard this story?
I've heard something on the news.
He wanted to break up with her and kick her out of the house after 7 years or whatever it's been. And instead of doing it himself, he had his agents call her and say, hey, pack a bag, weekend flight, here we go. They picked her up. We're going to go to the jet. Halfway to the airport, they take her to a hotel and drop her off, say, yeah, no jet. Tiger's just kicked you out of the house and they're changing the locks.
Well, That's pretty low.
That's pretty low.
I don't know how you can get much lower.
That's pretty low. That's pretty low. Now wait. He did get a 9-iron swung at him one time. So maybe he was a little worried that she's got a golf club within range and she's going to start swinging. I don't know. Yeah. I shouldn't laugh. I really shouldn't laugh. But
she might have had a gun in her purse.
Right. Well, and, you know, I agree with you. For the last few years, Tiger's been likable to me. He's just at a different place in his life, and he's been likable to me. I'm cool with that.
The only time I've ever seen him where he looks happy. And he's got some real friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, breaking up in a marriage or a 7-year relationship, I don't want any part of it.
Yeah.
Unless you're living it.
What did Tiger do earlier this year? He handed a tampon to Justin Thomas as they were walking down the fairway.
Yes, because he outdrove him.
I know. You saw that. Did anybody ever do anything like that to you?
Well, no.
I mean, those are really good friends.
I never heard it.
My point is, Tiger and Justin Thomas are very good friends, right?
Yeah. It was. I mean, he was laughing and trying to hide it. He was helping him.
I know. I liked it.
I did too.
Women got mad. Different groups got mad. It's sexist. It's whatever. I'm like, come on, get over yourself. I'm tired of it. All right, I'm rooting for Rory because I still want him to get the career slam. I'm rooting for Rory this week. And I've always felt like his game is built for that golf course. He had the meltdown a few years ago where he had a 4-shot lead making the turn on Sunday. And he hit it to a place where nobody even knew was there. And there's a house back in the woods that nobody knew about. And it was a disaster. Rory's playing pretty well.
I was watching that.
Yeah, I know.
I was watching that.
I think we're,
and we got to 10 and he had a driver.
Yeah.
Hell, I used to hit 3-wood there sometimes.
Yeah.
Because you got to hook it to hit the hill and roll down, and you can't hit it straight because, I mean, you could hit the same drive, and the one that hooked and the one that didn't, you got 160, and they got 220 over on the right because it doesn't come down the hill. And I was watching him, and I was sitting there with Marcia, and I said, oh, no, this is not good.
Right.
What do you mean? I see he's got the wrong club, and look at him. Every time he looks up, he keeps aiming a little further right, a little further right.
I know that feeling.
I mean, he hit a duck hook that was off the course in 100 yards.
So how about this year?
Over by the ranch.
Is he going to win one of these things or not?
Oh, yeah, I think so. And matter of fact, the last tournament, he didn't putt as well as he'd been putting, but he did putt really solid from 6-7 feet in. And that's really the key at Augusta, because you just get more than those than you want.
Well, you tell me if I'm wrong. I think the best skill, like they're all bombers. They all hit a long way and all the metrics now say hit driver and just hit as far as you can and deal with it because scrambling or whatever is obviously a big deal. Scottie Scheffler has something in his game. I've heard all through the years, all these people, oh, they're great short game. I used to hear, oh, Phil Mickelson hits these incredible shots. Yeah, he did. He hit some really incredible flop shots that would go up there to 2 feet and you go, wow, that was amazing. Then the next time they'd be saying, oh, he's so great. He's so great. And he'd hit it to 6 feet and missed the putt. Scottie Scheffler with a wedge in his hand, to me, that's a weakness in my game, so I really appreciate when I see him doing it. I can't even believe how good he is and how many times he's like, 30 or 40 yards from the hole off the green over somewhere, and he hits it inside the leather. It's just a tap-in. It's unbelievable, and that bodes very well for Augusta. Is Scottie Scheffler the player to beat?
Absolutely. And Rahm's 1A. And then after that, I think it's Rory. Those are the top three. And, if Matsuyama can stay healthy, he's won there once. Mm-hmm. He could do really well. The problem with Rory, I've watched it a lot this year. Got interested in it again. And other than, the putting and the chipping, the pitching, whatever, I haven't seen him play 18 holes on the TV that I see that he doesn't hit two really bad drives in 18 holes. And the rest of them are perfect.
Yeah.
You know, But the dispersion pattern, when it goes wrong,
is rough.
Way too big.
You know, it's what the metrics are saying now. I mean, they're using all this analytics and stuff. It says, hit that driver, even if a couple of them are wild, unless it's out of bounds, you're a pro, you're probably still going to find a way to save par. And that's what the metrics show, is just bomb away. So I see.
I know
why he does it.
Oh, I understand. But, you know, if I could work with him, with Justin Thomas, you know, I'd make sure they got rid of everybody around him. And I would collect all his putting materials and aids and throw them in a deep river and tell him he's not allowed to putt for 2 months, and tell him, now when we go play the tournament, you know, you can hit 20 putts on the practice green. That's all the practice you get, and go putt. Cause the man, he was as good as there was.
Yeah.
And Justin Thomas, same way. Mm-hmm. Justin Thomas takes 2 minutes to hit a shot now.
Yep.
You know, I mean, when you're Justin Thomas, how in the hell you think he got there? He didn't have a cat. He didn't do anything. Oh, this is 138. The wind's blowing here. I think I'll knock down a little man there. You know, now you want to talk about it for 2 minutes before you do it and listen to that guy telling you how to do it? No, thank you.
That's why we love talking golf with Jim Colbert, folks. I hope you get a chance sometime this year to get to Colbert Hills. You're likely to see Jim there. He's around a lot of days, whether he's out at the range hitting some balls, chipping and putting, playing a few holes, or maybe having his afternoon glass of Chardonnay over at Colbert Hills. You'll have a great time playing at Colbert Hills. If you'd like to stay and play, as we mentioned at the top of the podcast, it's an easy email. It's joni@colberthills.com, J-O-N-I, joni@colberthills.com. She can set you up. If you mention the podcast, they're going to give you a little bit of a break on the price. That's a pretty cool deal. I am ready for golf season, my friend. Get your butt back to Kansas.
Yeah, I'm sorry I overtalked, but
no,
you get me going.
We have no time constraints here. If people want to stop listening, they hit the stop button.
Okay.
It is all good.
You should hit it. You should hit it with me.
No, because it got crazy at the end. We got all kinds of wild that last few minutes, buddy. That was good stuff. Thank you so much, as always.
Okay, thanks. Can't wait to see you this summer.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC. To get exclusive patrons-only podcasts, receive a weekly newsletter, and attend in-person patrons-only parties, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron today. This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.